place then. At this point, although it's not the end of the show completely, let me introduce the group to you. On bass, John Paul Jones. On drums, John Bonham. Jimmy Page, lead guitar.
What? Ho, this is Brian. Call me the Burly Stranger Man Gardner. Coming to you from Ice Station Zeppelin, a.k.a. the Ramblin' Towers Dungeon Studio in scenic Hesper, Ontario. And you are listening to Ramble On Radio, episode number 113. Ramble On Radio is the very only Led Zeppelin podcast on this or any other known internets. Be sure to go to rambleonradio.com for all your news, reviews, and any links I might happen to mention during the show. You can subscribe to Ramble On Radio through iTunes. If you're in iTunes, you go to pick up... it's after Christmas and you forgot your Alison Krauss, Robert Plant Christmas song. Quickly going to grab it before Christmas is over. Stop by Ramble On Radio. It's just Google Ramble On Radio or just search in the iTunes and it'll come up. And leave a review. If you're at Podbean, I'm on Podbean at I Am Brian Dammit. You can listen on Spreaker, Spreaker.com. And be sure to follow Ramble On Radio on Spreaker. And both Spreaker and Podbean have apps. You can listen to us on your phone on the go. And also check us out at YouTube. And episode 112 will get up on YouTube. I meant to do it right away and it didn't get done right away. So therefore, I sit down today and didn't do it. Hadn't done it yet. So probably in the next couple of days I'll get that up. You can follow Ramble On Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and at Ramble On Blog on Twitter. And I try to respond to people from on both on those platforms. And Twitter quite often see stuff up there. And the Facebook page is semi-active. Usually with people adding links and that sort of thing. So, go there. If you're on Facebook, follow. You click to ask to follow. I have to approve you. I will just check and make sure you're an actual person, not a spam bot who's going to leave porn links on my website. And other than that, I kind of peek, make sure you've been on Facebook for a little while, make sure you got some actual friends. And that's it. I don't read through your politics to make sure you're okay or anything like that. So follow us on Facebook, follow us, come on over to Twitter and say hello. Okay, the intro was December 30, 1968 in Spokane, Washington. And that was their second or third show in the States. I don't have my glasses on. I have my Dave Lewis concert file. I do not have my glasses on. and trying to read this, it's very small type. But they did Thursday, the U.S., very first U.S. shows ever, December 26th in Denver, 27th in Seattle, 28th in Vancouver, 29th in Portland, 30th in Spokane. So their fifth show. It may well be their first bootlegged one. It might be, although I seem to recall there was Gonzaga University somewhere in there. So this must have been their sixth show. There was a Gonzaga show, I'm sure, and it was bootlegged. But anyway, and this is the Gonzaga, sorry. So Spokane, Washington, Gonzaga University. I'm almost positive it's the first bootleg show. There you go. See, if I had my glasses on, I didn't notice that. Interesting, Dave Lewis, in the concert file notes, the group received a lukewarm reception by the majority of the audience had come to see Vanilla Fudge. So that's what that was. A little clip from there. Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington. And Red Zeppelin, December 30, 1968. And kind of different. This is the New Year's. I was actually going to have this ready and drop it on fairly early New Year's Day for you guys. And drop the ball. but I had a chat with, about a half hour chat with my pal Steve Sauer. He's the first person I ever had on the show. He used to run LedZeppelinNews.com, The Lemon Squeezings. He goes by Steve the Lemon Sour online in the Zeppelin forums and whatnot. And Steve, we had a chat and just talked some general stuff. Talked to our favorite Led Zeppelin tribute band, Get the Lead Out. He's the guy who introduced me to them. We talked about some of what Steve's up to. He's a working musician these days. So we kind of talked about what happened to his podcast or what happened to his blog. And then we talked about the interview he did in 2009 with Miles Kennedy. And Miles, he got Miles talking about playing with Jimmy Page, John Paul Jones, and Jason Bonham. And he is graciously allowing us to play that interview. I'm playing it from about the 17:45 mark. There is a link currently on Ramble On Radio to the whole interview. But we're playing it from 17:45 on, in which he talks about Led Zeppelin with him. It's what's relevant here. It's the reason we're playing that part of it. So very gracious of Steve to let me use his copyrighted material. And then we're going to end off the show with a song by Steve. He, like I say, he's a performing musician, and a couple of years ago, he dropped a song out there called I Ain't From Texas. No, I Ain't From Texas. Hence, by the way, the burly man, burly stranger man in my intro was from that. So No, I Ain't From Texas, and we're going to outro with Steve's song, No, I Ain't From Texas. It's available on iTunes. It's on Spotify if you don't really want to pay for your music. If you want to contribute to Steve's coffers, 99 cents at iTunes. I'm sure he's not getting rich off it. Although you know what? If everybody who listens to this podcast went and bought it, you might get dinner out of it. You might get hey, Steve, I'm working for you, brother. Hey, you tell two friends the old... what was the shampoo commercial? It was a shampoo, right? You know, you tell two friends and they tell two friends. The next thing you know, Steve's got a weekend away. But anyway, so I'm going to jump right into... There was one thing I wanted to talk about really briefly. I'll talk more about it next week. But there was a New Year's Eve Jimmy Page interview. Hit it on BBC. Google around. You can find it. It's still available for a week. I downloaded the file that somebody else made available. Oh, excuse me. Oh. And I have listened to about 20-25 minutes. Others are telling me it's the most comprehensive interview of his career yet. And I've heard that from a couple of sources. And I think I've listened to about 20 minutes of it. And yeah, he's talking still about his studio work. He's talked about what I've heard so far about a Shirley Bassey gig for Goldfinger, playing on the Who's I Can't Explain. So yeah, it seems like a fairly good interview. I'll talk more about it next week after I've listened to the whole thing. I might try to pull a few snippets out and play them here. And we'll get to that next week. If you can find it online, do so, is what I recommend. And here's my pal, Steve Sauer, talking about just a variety of stuff. We're just going to chaw the fat a little bit and let you listen in. Okay, so I'm with Steve Sauer formerly of Lemon Squeezings, I guess. Performing musician, active performing musician, and writer with Carol Miller's Get the Lead Out. Did I miss anything, Steve?
That's about it.
Okay. Good. But Lemon Squeezings, you don't really do anymore, eh? It's been over a year since you posted anything, you know what?
Yeah, the last thing I posted there was sort of an explanation why I'm not posting.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, I was just reading it.
Yeah. If memory serves me correctly, the reason is because it kind of took a backseat in my life, you know, toward just, advancing my own career and stuff like that. I didn't really have the time to do, you know, what you're doing, and you're doing well.
Well, yeah, thanks. Yeah, there are times when I don't know how I do this, and it's, I understand how it falls off, you know, it's just so easy to get caught up in other stuff, and
Yeah,
there are times when I looked at it and go, geez, it's been 6 weeks since I've done anything, and you don't even realize it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, at one point, I found myself just criticizing Jimmy Page all the time for not, being an active musician anymore. And then, you know, I kind of thought, well, what a hypocrite, because I've always wanted to be a musician myself. You know, I found myself sitting on a couch wishing I had time to be a musician. So, I don't know, I kind of changed my life at some point and decided, well, what am I going to do to advance my career? So that's kind of where I've been ever since.
Yeah. And the other thing, I get what you're saying about you sit around criticizing, and we're fans first, right? It's not fun to be that critical all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a big fan of what Robert Plant's done the last while, and I find it really, really hard to sit around and talk about it sometimes because I don't, you know, I just would rather not talk about it than be negative about it, you know?
Right. Yeah. I myself, I liked what he's been doing. I know on the Alison Krauss tour, I saw that show like 5 times, you know, and been to a couple on every tour, you know, since then, or actually just one this past year. Philly, which was a really, really good show. For some reason, Philly stands out as like an amazing place for these guys.
Right. Yeah, and actually, I didn't go when he came to Toronto, and by the time he came around, they had really rocked up the set list.
Oh, yeah.
And it might have been a good show, but I didn't quite make it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, you mentioned Alison Krauss. This was all my question list for you. You've heard the Christmas song they did together?
I heard it a couple times. I guess I didn't put it up there among my absolute favorites or anything like that. I think I forced myself to listen to it a second time because sometimes, you know, first impression might not be spot on.
Yeah.
You know, it might grow on you. But it didn't do anything for me the second time, so I haven't heard it since.
No, sorry. Well, yeah, it's a Christmas. You'll pull it out every year and listen to it once or twice, right?
Yeah, I definitely will.
Yeah, I'm the same. It's just, I can take cheesy Christmas music, so, which is really what it is.
Yeah.
How about the remasters? You been buying any box sets or buying all the CDs up? Or
I've got, I've got the Coda Deluxe Edition and on vinyl. And that, I love it, but my record players are not in good working condition right now, so I haven't been able to spin the thing. But I've been paying attention to Spotify since Zeppelin, you know, has allowed everything to go on Spotify. Pretty much on every release date, I'd be on there, listening to all the albums and, you know, especially the outtakes. Man, there were some really good outtakes.
Yeah, there were. There were.
Yeah. Kristen Sword was amazing, and just about everything on Coda. That's a really, really good listen.
I really like the alternate version of When the Levee Breaks.
Oh, yeah. The one that was on Coda.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, I played that last night, and I was just paying attention to John Paul Jones on it. Oh my goodness, that's amazing right there.
Yeah, I agree. I have that on my running list, so you kind of pick stuff up as you're out running, and you got something in your headphones, you know.
Yeah.
The drumming is actually really solid on that one, too.
Oh, yeah, it's really solid. I mean, the reason I was listening to it, I was writing something for Carol Miller's show about the creation of When the Levee Breaks, and I was using a clip of John Paul Jones talking about how the song really developed from the drum sound. But then I was wondering about this outtake where the drumming is totally different, and I love this groove, by the way, the one on the Coda Deluxe Edition.
Yeah.
I love that groove, but it's a totally different drum sound, and so the riff is there, you know, and Jonesy's playing it differently and everything, but I wonder where that falls in, you know, well, along with just sort of creating that original recording with, where it falls in chronologically, I'm trying to say.
Right. It's probably... Probably where it falls in chronologically is just, you mentioned the groove. It just, when they change the drum sound, they change the groove, you know?
Yeah. I think it opened it up a lot more. It seemed it was pretty tight with the Coda version.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were locked into a certain groove, but they probably, that just opened it up. And then, you know, with that slide guitar that Paige was overdubbing, with the harmonica, the multiple harmonicas, I think. It just really opened up the arrangement, and they were able to take it other places.
Yeah, actually, you mentioned multiple harmonicas. I sent our boys in Get the Lead Out.
Yeah.
They opened with that in Mississauga a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, I love that.
And yeah, two harmonicas. They had both Paul and Andrew playing harmonica on it.
Yeah. So. Because some of the harmonica in that song is on a separate track from the vocals, so he's singing while he's also playing harmonica, which is physically impossible for one person. Right. So that necessitates the second person playing harmonica for the stage act.
Yeah,
they do everything just tirelessly, carefully. And I mean, I think I'm up to like 12, 13 times I've played with Get the Lead Out.
Yes.
And I can tell you, like at a sound check, they will still be arguing with each other about, no, it's not that note. You got to play it like this until they get it right. They're really meticulous about that stuff on a daily basis,
Yeah.
Just challenging themselves to get higher and higher in this like percentage, you could ask Paul Hammond, one of the guitarists, after any show, how would you rate tonight's performance? And he'll give you a percentage, on an off night, it'll be like 92%. On a really on night, it might be as high as 99.6%. But there's always that little bit of room for improvement, because they're such sticklers for perfection.
Yeah, I know. I was backstage after one show one time, and he says to me, he says, I know you pay attention to this stuff. He says, I screwed up that first bar of the solo on Achilles. And I'm going, I'm thinking, boy, there's something I didn't notice.
Yep. I've said to them before, say to Paul Hammond, right at the end of that guitar solo on Dazed and Confused, I didn't quite hear the harmonics. And he'll go, yeah, you're right, man, And then the next time I hear him do it, it's there. And he'll even, give me a wink or a nod or something at that moment. And I'll go, oh, yep, he was paying attention.
Yeah, he takes it very seriously.
Yeah.
I was with some guys in Mississauga who go and see classic albums live and whatnot all the time.
Uh-huh.
And one of them says to me, I don't know if I can go back and see those guys again. They're just not that good all of a sudden.
Well, it's funny. I also played with classic albums live, and that was probably 2008, 2009 or something like that. And it was I guess if you play with classic albums live all the time, then you pretty much do know who you're going to be playing with. And, you can email and phone and Skype or whatever you need to do to talk about arrangements ahead of time before you actually get to be in the same room together. But then you are in the same room together on the day of your first performance. And so, like, you know, for me, my first shows with them were a set of six dates doing Houses of the Holy, all in one venue. It was like a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then the following Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So that first Thursday, we all got in the room together, and then I was kind of finding out, you know, like what I was supposed to do. And as a matter of fact, I brought a keyboard along with me that they laughed at. They said, no, you're not going to use that on stage. So here, you can use this. So then I'm, you know, just sort of getting used to the patches that I'll be using, you know, like the electric piano on this, regular piano on that. Here's the clavinet and blah, 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 you know, but, and I'm just also meeting the guys for the first time. And they were all really, you know, nice and engaging, and they seemed to know what they were doing and everything. But, you know, they lack probably that fine tune quality that Get the Lead Out, you know, has right. for not really changing, you know, the core membership over the years and everything.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. With classic albums live, you don't know who you're going to get really. Unless they, I don't know, maybe they post it or something, but.
But yeah, I didn't know that about them actually.
But they do a really good job. But I'd say Get the Lead Out probably does have the edge, you know, and that's with the stability of the membership and you know, really fine tuning things on a regular basis.
Yeah,
yeah,
moving in oddball songs and have you heard Paul's guitar or Paul's album by the way?
Yeah, I'm sitting right next to it, as a matter of fact. I gave it a spin. I got it in the mail just about a week ago. Okay. And then I got to have a conversation with the Jim Cavanaugh, who's drummer on tracks 1, 3, and 5 on it.
Okay.
He told me some stories, you know, about how those songs came to be, how those recordings came to be and everything. Yeah, just a little bit of insight on the making of that album. It's really good.
It's a great album.
Better as the disc goes on, there are some songs on there, like one of them, I can't remember a track number or anything, but it starts out with like electronic drums all by themselves and kind of like I forget how I'd describe it, like a techno beat or something like that. But it sounds really, really electronic. And I'm thinking to myself, this is not exactly my cup of tea. That ends up being like my favorite track on the whole album.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I know the one you mean. I played it for my buddy Ron at Christmas. He was down, and I got mine like on the 23rd, I think it was. And so I was playing it for him, and that's the one song he said, I don't particularly like that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like it, and it's for people listening, if Jimmy Page did a solo album that was strictly instrumental, this could be it.
Yeah,
It's got a lot of different styles in it, but it's always got that kind of groove to it.
Yeah, really cool. The first track on there, I was like, oh, yeah, this is what you want as an opener on the album.
Yeah,
you
know, for sure.
It's really just traditional, steady groove
rock. That one I actually thought would be fabulous with a really good vocal performance.
Yeah.
Some really good lyrics, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you worry about somebody, you know, singing about a weasel in their pants and ruining the song, right?
Outrider.
Yeah. So what have you been playing lately? You've been...
All sorts of stuff. Yeah. Oh, and this has been an incredible year. In just these 12 months, I've played with at least 2 different bands each month. So I'm up to a count of over 24, 25 different band lineups I've been playing with this year.
Wow. You know?
The main, like, well, yeah, it was in December 2014. I first started playing with this group, AM Radio, right from their first show on. You've been to the Rib House.
Yeah, I've been to the Rib House.
Yeah, that's where
for your wedding, actually.
So... AM Radio, the song list that we do is stuff that was popular on radio, at least in the Philadelphia area, between 1965 and 75.
Stuff that was on the AM radio.
Yeah, exactly. Hence the name, as you say. And So a lot of this stuff, I mean, I was born in 79. I didn't know half of this stuff. So I had to, like, learn it, you know, ahead of time. I had about 3 months to learn this stuff and practice. And the way that I learn is just listening to it a whole bunch. So here I am, like, listening to a bunch of stuff that would have been popular, what, four to 14 years before I was born. And just kind of, for a lot of it, hearing it for the first time and just obsessing over it. Just kind of like, what sounds are here that are not produced by a guitar, by a bass, by drums, you know, and then how much of that would I be able to replicate as a keyboard player? So, you know, I'm doing a whole bunch of horn lines in addition to all the, you know, the Rhodes pianos and, you know, just all the, and organs and this and that. That's been a real, like, challenge for me, just sort of getting used to playing all this stuff. And for the first few gigs, Brian, I was, like, addicted to the notes that I had made myself ahead of time. You know, like, here's a chord chart, and this part repeats four times, and this part does that. But over the course of playing these gigs for the last year, now I don't need that chart in front of me. I've got a lot of it memorized. Right. What I still need, though, is, like, you know, right after they tell me what the next song is going to be, I need to look up what sounds I'm going to use.
Yeah.
And just hit that on the keyboard. So, like, you know, it might be a C32 over here on that keyboard and like, something else. User 1, preset 3, you know, like all these stupid little combinations of things that I have only a few seconds to dial up. And then once I do, then the rest is all up to me just sort of, you know, playing it right.
And I love, actually love the idea of the, and I've thought of stealing it and putting together my own kind of, same kind of band. And just doing those songs that were hits, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like a lot of fun. And it's something that could be really fun, you know, done right.
It is. And people are up and dancing to a lot of it. We've had a couple of shows that we played at a new entertainment place, you know, inside a casino, and really, you know, got a lot of people out there dancing and enjoying, you know, raving about it for weeks afterwards.
You're right. Well, really cool. I've seen a couple of your videos online, and we talked about Get the Lead Out, but, so, you know, so people can know what you're doing is you had Paul Sinclair up from Get the Lead Out.
Yeah.
He did a Davy Jones song.
Yeah, we did that crazy obscure song Girl that's on Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
We also did the Monkees' Daydream Believer, and we've done that one ever since, you know, with our regular male singer, Kevin Burke.
Right. Yeah, I saw that and thought, that's a great idea, just for, you know, get a guest up and say, okay, pick a dumb song.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that's one of his favorite songs. You know, I was playing a show with Paul Sinclair the day that, like, either the day that Davy Jones died or a couple days after. Anyway, I mentioned it to him, not knowing that he was a huge Davy Jones fan.
Right.
And he goes, oh, man, yeah, you know, I'm so torn up about it. And I said, well, would you want to do a Monkees song tonight? And he goes, you know what song I really want to do is that stupid song from the Brady Bunch, Girl, Look What You've Done. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't think I know more than about that much of it, you know, so I'd really have to learn it. But then a few years later, we got the opportunity to do it for a birthday party that was taking place at the Rib House.
Right.
And so there I had, you know, I must have played that thing about 100 times just, you know, in the couple of days leading up to that gig.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. I would have seen that episode of the Brady Bunch live. Remember it, you know, and I would have seen it.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't have been able to pull that song out off the top of my head, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Great. Well, I'm glad you're busy.
Yeah,
that's always now. What about your Get the Lead Out stuff? You're with Carol Miller, I mean.
Right, the radio show.
Yeah, you still working with her? I got it.
Yeah. She got to interview Jimmy over, you know, via satellite a couple times during this whole remastering thing. So we've had Jimmy on the show.
Nice.
A few times.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't get to listen to it. It's just not available up here.
Oh, okay.
You know, so it's it's too bad because I like her show when I can hear it, but
yeah.
Yeah.
My work on it, I prepare sort of the on this day in Led Zeppelin history type stuff.
Right.
Which, you know, that's I started writing them on that topic in 1998.
Right. And actually, I guess I should mention Danny Somak's book, Get the Lead Out. You contributed the same sort of thing to that, right?
Yeah, there's a timeline section in there.
Yeah.
A lot of that came from that same type of stuff.
Right. Yeah. And actually, I was reading, I got the book and I was reading it. And I'm like lying in bed and I says to my wife, I think it was 1970, and there was, like, they wrote Immigrant Song and recorded it, like, album out within 3 months or something. It was kind of looking at your timeline, I was going, this is incredible.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I think that they went to Iceland, and then a week later, they were performing Immigrant Song live at the Bath Festival.
At the Bath Festival, yeah. And then they recorded it about 2 weeks later or something like that, and...
Yeah,
it all happens so fast. You think nowadays how long it takes to get anything done.
Right.
They just roll through it. And then I have a beef. People bitch, oh, I don't like Led Zeppelin. They sing all these songs about hobbits and Vikings. And you think, you know, they have one Viking song.
Right.
They wrote it, performed it, recorded it within about 3 weeks. I mean, that's hardly a career, you know?
Right.
It was something that they didn't even think about. They just rolled it off and did it.
Yeah.
You know, it's we overthink things sometimes. And I mean, I'm guilty of it too, but that's one that bugs me when people do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, also when you're thinking about the amount of time that went into these albums, they were really doing them quickly. But at the time, it seemed like an eternity because they had probably the record company wondering, you know, when's the next album gonna be out?
Yeah, we need one for Christmas here, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, I know for sure. Okay, I want to talk about two things I wanted to play from you, Steve, and talk about. First off, there's an interview you did with Miles Kennedy about 6 years ago, if I got that right?
Something like that, yeah.
2009, right? Right after... A year after he played with them, I think.
I think that's right, yeah.
And in it, you broached the subject of him playing with Jimmy Page, John Paul Jones, and Jason Bonham.
Right.
Tell me about how you got the interview and how it went.
All right. I was very careful to broach that subject, by the way.
Oh, why not? Yeah, it's... Yeah, well, you worry that he's going to get nasty about it or not like that, right?
Yeah, well, I've been warned, cautioned ahead of time. Miles is a very private person, and he looks back on that time with those guys like, you know, really just he was in amazement and all that sort of stuff, and he doesn't like to talk about it. And so that's what I had going into this interview. And so, of course, the interview was supposed to be about the Alter Bridge DVD that was coming out at the time. And so we talked about that for, you know, that and other things, other projects that he had. He was working on a solo project, and he was, I think, working with Slash and stuff like that. So we had a bunch of stuff to talk about. But then when I was done talking about that stuff, I still had, you know, a whole bunch of other list of questions that I wanted to get through. And I was thinking, oh no, what's going to happen as soon as I bring this up? Is he going to go, oh, interview over, click, you know, that type of thing.
Which would have been, really, in my opinion, is just as good when somebody does that, actually.
Yeah. but he didn't. And so he rolled with it, and that was really cool. And I was really surprised, as a matter of fact. But yeah, so, I mean, the first thing that I did was I transitioned by asking him about did he used to pretend to be Jimmy Page when he was looking in a mirror? Was he singing? You know, that type of thing. Because he used to play with a tennis racket in his hand, you know, looking in the mirror and, yeah, pretending to be Jimmy Page. What's he singing at the same time and all that sort of stuff. And so that at least opened up the topic, you know, for his influences and, you know, the whole Zeppelin experience and that sort of thing. So then I was happy to move on to the other questions about, like, by the way, did you have an opportunity to jam with them? Because it wasn't even, like, established for sure that that he had done it.
Right.
And, you know, whether Jason was there, I had no idea, you know, this sort of thing. So it turned out Jason was there, and he brought him in, recommended him for the thing, and then they got to write and record together. Well, maybe the record. I'm not sure about the recordings.
I would guess tapes rolled at some point. You know,
yeah,
they must have had tapes in the corner rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
I would think so. And actually, you asked them. The question that I've always curious about from those sessions is, did any of it wind up on them Crooked Vultures? And you actually asked him that.
Right. And he said no. He had heard them Crooked Vultures thing and didn't recognize anything from it.
Yeah. And now he only played on two songs. So who knows, and you know, if there was more. But yeah, okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to play that in a couple of minutes, Steve.
Okay.
But before we do, I'm going to outro with your song.
No, I Ain't From Texas.
No, I Ain't From Texas. Tell me how that came about.
Well, I had been sort of doing this writing, this journalism thing on all sorts of topics that I didn't understand. You know, as a career for the first seven or eight years after college. And let me think about it. So, yeah, I mean, it was just I was ready to make a change in my life and follow my passions. And I was discovering, you know, that I loved traveling and I loved music. And so all I knew was that I wanted to take some time off from, you know, everything just to do some travel and enjoy some music. So I threw a keyboard in the back of my car and I drove around the South for like 4 months almost. And a lot of that time I spent in Texas, and that was one of the more endearing places. You know, I had some friends there. I made a whole bunch of new friends while I was there. But, you know, why don't I write about my experiences, in the form of a song? So at a time when this riff popped into my head, I, you know, independently was coming up with some lyrics and stuff. It was really just in poem form. And then I realized, wait a minute, this could go over top of that riff that I just came up with rather easily. So, you know, put them together. And then there's also a video that I made of it that's up on YouTube and includes some of the photos and everything that that I was taking during my travels in Texas. So it puts all. Oh, and I think I did everything, you know, in the span of just a few days. The video and the lyrics and the music, you know, recording it all and submitting it to YouTube and this and that.
Right. And it is actually on iTunes, right?
Yeah, I did that a few years later. Yeah, because I might be a music performer, but I don't do a whole lot of recording. I don't do a whole lot of writing either. So right. There was this thing that I had laying around from a few years earlier, and I thought, well, why not put it on iTunes and stuff and see if anybody ever spins it. Who cares?
Well, I've spun it, so there you go.
That's cool. Thank
I'm going to play it, and I'm going to tell 99 cents. People can buy it on iTunes. They can also listen to it on Spotify. They can check it out on YouTube, and I will definitely get the YouTube video up on the website too.
Cool.
Because I like the song. I do. It's a groovy little song.
Sweet. Thank you.
Yeah.
I probably like the YouTube version the best because, you know, it's got the imagery with it too.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I will definitely look for that. All right. Thanks for doing this, Steve.
You got it, Brian.
And, we got to get together sometime soon.
I agree. I'm there a whole lot.
Yeah, I have to try and make it back down to the Rib House for our first Sunday.
Yeah. always really fun.
Yeah, that's for people who don't know, Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, the first Sunday of every month, the guys from Get the Lead Out jam out the night, and they do Aerosmith stuff, and it's just an open jam night, right?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And you really, have to play, and...
Really late, and it ends even later.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. And then the next day, they can go to the, what's the name of that mall?
Oh, the King of Prussia Mall.
King of Prussia Mall, great big mall. It's a good area.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Steve.
You got it. Thank you.
All right, no problems. And there is my pal, Steve the Lemon Sour. And check him out on, well, if you Google him, you'll find some stuff. And I will get the video, the YouTube video for for his song up on the website. But if you go to YouTube and look for East Coast Refugee, that's his handle, East Coast Refugee. He's got some stuff up there. Although I confess I'm not seeing, I mean, it's from Texas, but he's got stuff of his own playing. And it's home maybe if we go here. But anyway, so here he is. Yeah, his video's there if you look. If you look under East Coast Refugee, it's there. And here is his interview with Miles Kennedy from 2009, and just a really cool interview. So here you go.
So let me ask you, about a year ago, when you're in a rehearsal room, you know, with Jimmy Page and right. John Paul Jones and Jason Bonham, right?
Right.
Do you have a guitar on you at the time?
No, I didn't, actually. I didn't. I did that without a guitar, which I'd done before, you know, when I first came down and did the Alter Bridge thing, and that was my first experience at fronting something without a guitar, which I've learned to do, but it was difficult at first. So, you know, because you become so it's an extension of you. You know, it's like having. I mean, it's like your wubby, you know. when I got down there, but got over there, I was just singing, and I don't know if at that point they knew I played guitar or not, but I was just beyond honored to even be standing in the proximity of those guys, so I was not complaining.
And you had worked with Jason a few years before. Well, did you know him, you know, with having been together on Rockstar?
Yeah, I knew him a little bit. And Rockstar was – we shot that, I believe, in 2000 or 2001. I think it was 2000, actually. And I hadn't spent a lot of time with Jason. I did on one occasion. It was in between takes, and I just walked up to him, and I said, I just want to tell you, you know, your father's legacy and, you know, what he did was the most important part of my musical development. You know, that band meant so much to me and still means so much to me. And I was kind of nervous about, you know, conveying that to him. I didn't know how he would react. And he was so gracious and so just appreciated that. And just the little bit I talked to him about it, I could really sense how proud he was. And you know, he was very, very, very cool. So, you know, fast forward to 8 years later, and I get this text out of the blue. You know, hey, you know, can you give me a call? I have a favor to ask. And next thing you know, I'm standing in a room with those guys. I mean, it's pretty surreal.
Wow. So was that from Jason? Did he have you come out there?
I think Jason got the ball rolling, from what I understand, and then sold the idea to the guys, and he's to this day. I mean, I think about that quite often. That you know, I have so much to Jason. I'm so grateful that you know, he helped get that thing going.
Yeah. And I just, you know, was reading that, you know, they were definitely working on some new music and stuff. Were you involved with any of the songwriting there?
Well, that was actually there were two a couple songs that I remember, and for me that was the biggest thrill, because it was, these were songs and pieces of music that no one had heard, you know, and I'm standing in a room and I'm putting my melodies and lyrics to it, and it was that for me as an artist. I don't think anything will ever quite compare to the feeling that I got from those moments. It felt like you were kind of a part of history for a few minutes there. You know, it was just amazing. Like it's hard to even put into words, Steve. It really is. Yeah.
Cool. And then I guess I just got one like final question on it. The Alter Bridge DVD ended up being filmed in Amsterdam, but I guess there were plans to, you know, do the whole shindig for the, you know, London show, which was, what was that, the Brixton Academy?
Correct.
And so you did do some shooting there, right? But it was just mostly backstage or something?
Yeah, we were supposed to do the whole shoot there. That was initially the plan. And I can't read. Something happened with, it was a production issue where they couldn't get everything they needed there on time. So we told the fans that the shoot was going to happen at Brixton. And for whatever reason, we were only able to capture certain elements of that show. We only had X amount of cameras, and the audio was only going to be at a certain quality. So it ended up not being the actual shoot, which actually is kind of a bummer, because I remember that night was very, very special. It was a real good night that I would have loved to have seen documented. But fortunately, Amsterdam seemed to go wonderfully as well. That was the initial plan, was to do it at Brixton.
Okay. And I just needed to confirm with you that, you know, there, I got a report from, like, an anonymous source who'd heard that, you know, Jimmy and John Paul were there, and I wasn't sure about, you know, Jason, too, or what. But anyway, were they?
Yeah. Jason was not, but both John and Jimmy were in the audience. So that's certainly I came to find out later actually that they were there, and I confirmed reports as well. So it was that's pretty mind blowing. when the whole band found that out, everyone's just like, you know, speechless. So when you got half a Led Zeppelin at your gig, it's kind of mind-blowing.
That is cool. And you were still, like, under consideration at that point?
Yeah, it was still being considered. So that was back in, I believe it was in November of 2008, if my memory serves correctly. So
I'm thinking December, but I'm, you know, I could be wrong.
You could be right. Yeah, I'm a little after a while, all those dates just kind of bleed into one. So you could be right.
How about that? Was there, obviously, you know, nothing came to fruition with them, and Jonesy went on to working with them Crooked Vultures. What do you think of that?
I wanted to
find out, did he use any of the rehearsal material?
No, actually, nothing that I remember. But I actually had the opportunity to see them play about a month ago, 3 weeks ago. He actually sent me an email and invited me to come to a show, and so I was actually in the middle of recording all my guitars and whatnot for my solo record. And I was in the middle of it, did most of it in a very remote area of Idaho. And I got this email and that. So we worked it out so that I could have a day off and flew down and saw him play in Portland. And it was, it was just unbelievable. I mean, I think that I'd gotten the record. I mean, I was one of the, you know, like yourself, I'm assuming, you know, I had done the whole pre-order thing. I was so excited. I mean, I couldn't think of a better lineup, you know, for him to be playing of contemporaries. You know, I have so much respect for Josh and Dave. Love the Queens of the Stone Age, love the Foo Fighters. So I just thought, oh, this is going to be, you know, amazing. And they definitely did not disappoint either. You know, both of the record and on live, it's even better. I mean, to stand in front of John Paul Jones and Dave Grohl and watch what those two do as a rhythm section. I mean, I don't think I'll ever witness a rock rhythm section like that in my lifetime. I mean, I think that's as good as it gets. So I'm so happy for John. He's out playing rock and doing it, you know, as like no one else can do it, you know, on the bass. And I think it's a very special lineup, and every rock fan should witness that. It's great.
Cool. I'd probably be remiss if I didn't just ask you to comment on, you know, Jimmy Page, just, you know, personally, like, as, you know, or as just a musician, or just as a human being, somebody to be in the same room with, or whatever. Just what are your impressions of Jimmy?
He's a genius. I mean, for me, he's hands down my favorite guitarist of all time. He's my favorite composer, rock composer. I think he's brilliant. Standing in the same room with him is I think if somebody told me that I was going to have the opportunity to do that at one point in my life, I probably would have thought it was going to be very scary, and because he's so good at putting off this very mysterious, he's such an enigma, you know. But standing in the same room with him, what I learned very quickly is he's very good at making you feel comfortable. Both him and John were, and you know, that was the thing that helped me the most. Was it was a very good atmosphere. They were very approachable and just down to earth and normal in that context. So it helped a lot, and it helped me just to enjoy it. You know, that's all I wanted to do. I knew that. It was something that, we hold that band in such high regard, that I just wanted to savor every minute and enjoy it. And they made that very, very easy. And so I think that, my memories of Jimmy and John will always be very fond ones.
Cool. I just, you know, read this morning that he says he's putting out some new stuff next year.
Good.
He's got to go around touring. He's got some new music, and, you know, it's been 2 years really since he's been on the stage, you know, and that was the Zeph reunion. So
that's good to hear. I'm so glad to hear that, because, I mean, it's just, there's so many of us who want to see them, you know, see him out playing, see, you know, where we get to see John now. Now Jimmy needs to do the same thing so we can, you know, continue to feed off the masters, you know.
Yeah, I'll probably see you in the record store in March or April or something whenever it comes.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be the two guys camped out in the front with our sleeping bags, waiting for the new stuff.
Absolutely. Well, cool. It's been a pleasure, you know, getting this from you. That's just awesome. Thank you very much for your time and, you know, and for not hanging up on me.
Oh, no. I wouldn't do that. No, thank you. Thank you. And thanks for, you know, from one Zeppelin fan to another, thanks for, you know, doing all that you do, because I know you are very passionate about that band. So, you know, that's very, very important. I appreciate that.
Cool. All right. Well, good luck with, you know, your continued writing this week, and we'll get to hear some new stuff.
Yeah. Great, Steve. Thank you, man.
Cool. All right. Take care now.
You too.
So that's it for Ramble On Radio. That was Steve Sauer with Miles Kennedy. Thank you again, Steve, for coming on the show. Thank you for providing us with the content of your Miles Kennedy interview. And that's it for Ramble On Radio, episode 113. Check RambleOnRadio.com for notes on this week's podcast, Led Zeppelin news, reviews, and any links I might mention in today's podcast. Follow Ramble On Radio on Facebook, Google+, and at Ramble On Blog on Twitter. You can subscribe to Ramble On Radio through iTunes. Don't forget to leave a review. If you're on iTunes, it helps. It just helps with the placement of the podcast. And also check it out at Ramble On Radio on YouTube. Thank you for listening to Ramble On Radio, episode 113. And we're going to close her out with Steve the Lemon Sour. No, I ain't from Texas.
Shiny box, so I asked for a Lone Star. I swear I heard that jukebox skip and a glass drop from a hand. You ain't from around here, are you? Said some burly stranger man. No, I ain't from Texas. Things different where I'm from. No, I ain't from Texas. But I'm sure they're glad I've come. Settled in for the old music day, where cowboy boots meet hula hoops with barbecue and hay. Patty Griffin was front and center stage. In the sky I heard me a thud. A storm rolled in and I stormed out. I ain't dealing with all this mud. No, I ain't from Texas. Things different where I'm from. No, I ain't from Texas. But I'm sure they're glad I've come. Oh. Well, I hit up to Fred Jewett. It was just the right time of year. The high school gym was full of folks. Good music they gathered to hear. We shared a tub of good crawfish, Miller Lite by the case. Or when they handed me the keys to their spare cabin, you could read upon my face. No, I ain't from Texas. Things different where I'm from. No, I ain't from Texas. But I'm sure they're glad I've come. So I hide me a plate of Marquez, where the tacos are all real. Even down to margarita or three, so much alky I couldn't feel. Next day I drove on through Hearn, where the speed limit's set in stone. If your license plate shows out of state, them cops won't leave you alone. No, I ain't from Texas. Things different where I'm from. No, I ain't from Texas. But I'm sure they're glad I've come. I got one more now. Well, went on down to Austin, saw Rocky on the 13th floor. Entranced by the jazz in the elephant room, I had to come back for more. When I went back the very next year with South by all the rage, my buds and I, we realized, got more in common just our age. Ain't none of us from Texas. Things different where we from. Ain't none of us from Texas. Yeah, but we should. but I'd kind of like to be. I'll be back to Texas. Yeah, thanks for having me. And I do mean that. Thanks for having me.
Switch off the internet.